Hi, I'm Ollie. I've played tabletop gaming for the last, well, it's probably only 10 months actually, but I've got very deeply into it, scarily so. My sight condition is I'm fully blind, I have zero sight, and I'm a writer, and I'm very excited to have a chat with you guys.
My name is Tyler Palermo. I'm from Western New York in the States, and I have retinitis pigmentosa. I have a little bit of vision remaining, just enough to get around, but not much to make out text or details of things. And I've been involved with tabletop role-playing for about 2 years now, playing and DMing.
Hello, my name is Acer Tolentino. I'm an Access Technology Coordinator at Society for the Blind in Sacramento, California.
I have been playing tabletop role-playing games for about 4 years.
And I run a podcast with my wife called The Redacted Files, which is an actual play tabletop RPG podcast.
I was diagnosed with glaucoma about a year after birth and have a little bit of light perception left, but nothing I trust to do anything. And let's just get the throttle pushed to the stop and get this train wreck going. I'm sort of curious to hear your stories about how you got into tabletop gaming. I myself started because of listening to podcasts and connecting to folks over social media to play online games, transitioned into getting that hobby and just a full-time part of my life.
I guess I had somewhat of a similar experience. I got into tabletop games at the same time I got into podcasts, as sort of realizing I was losing my vision and wanted more accessible ways to just have fun, interact with people in ways that I couldn't normally with my sighted peers. So listening to storytelling through podcast form or gaming through podcasts was kind of liberating, and realizing that a lot of that could be done in a similar way with games was all the same.
That's great. I got drunk one night and agreed to do it, but I haven't looked back. It was a friend who was working behind a bar, and he said, "Have you ever thought about playing D&D? And I hadn't. And he just told me about it, gave me a bit of a background about it. And I'm a writer, I'm a storyteller. And I thought, this could be a lot of fun. And actually doing something that I love, which is telling stories, but with people I love as well, my friends. So that's kind of how I slipped into it.
I think that's traditionally be involved past the post-secondary education recruitment process. What sorts of games have you tried out, and what have you really connected with as far as a characterization or system that really ignites your interest in gaming?
I was pulled immediately to Dungeons & Dragons, the staple, of course. I've played a little bit of smaller games like Monster of the Week. The high fantasy is always what pulls me back into playing games and telling stories.
Yeah, for me, I haven't been playing for, as I say, 10 months, but it has just been, it's exclusively D&D, and trying to get to grips with the rules for that has been enough so far. But it has made me a lot more aware of other sort of gaming systems. I used to play a game when I was a little kid, when I had quite a bit more sight, called Hero Quest, which is actually more board-based and a lot simpler. But that's what just kind of drew me again to the D&D. It was very reminiscent of that. There's a goblin over there, there's an orc over there. But then also adding those characterizations, and I think it is a fantastic thing to do to siphon off part of your own personality into this vessel of a character and say, well, what would I be like if I was, you know, if I was an elf or a dwarf or whatever sort of species or, you know, it would be, depending on the game.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Take it to the absolute basics. There's a website out there, I can't remember where it is, but you can actually type in all the information about yourself and you come out with your character sheet, so all your ability scores and, yeah, you know, what race you'd be and all that sort of stuff. And you can almost compartmentalize real life, you know, you reverse engineer these sort of things that are being created, and as well as the mechanics. You can get a bit over complicated, I suppose, with some gaming systems. I imagine that they can do, because you still want the game to roll on. But there's aspects like I was reading about, you know, choosing to strike someone in a certain part of their body to disable them from, you know, a magic user to cut their hand off or something like that. You can't really do that because it doesn't flow with the game necessarily, but that obviously depends on the mechanic of the gaming system, I'm assuming.
So I'm in a transition period, I guess you could say, between living a sighted life and a mostly sightless life, mm-hmm. and seeing the difference between what the games I used to play and the games I play now. Have either of you had vision at a time when you played games that you can no longer play? Was there an adaptation experience that you had?
For me, I did used to, when I did have sight, I went fully blind when I was 18. I'm 36 now. I used to play video games, and obviously with diminishing sight, there wasn't really anything that I moved onto until finding D&D. There was a game that really felt fully accessible. Obviously, there's lots of games that have audio games and stuff which you can get and that sort of stuff, but they feel a little bit diet. The diet games, they cut down a little bit too much and they simplify a little bit too much for me.
Sure.
So going to actually getting to the D&D sort of thing, which is fully accessible, depending on how it's done, it's fully accessible. So that was my transition was this desolation of 16 years of non-gameplay.
I didn't have quite 16 years, but I will say I was a lot better at first-person shooters when I was 18 as opposed to 28.
Oh, sure.
But I think, generally speaking, my path as a gamer sort of tracked pretty closely to my vision loss. So I was playing first- and third-person shooters and action games for most of my life, and as time went on, I switched more to playing strategy games and role-playing games that were more turn-based, gave you more time to sort of process or didn't require you to be so finicky. And ultimately, I think it was about the time that Grand Theft Auto 4 came out when I sat down and was like, you know what? I am literally throwing money away by buying these games and being so terrible at them. Actually, about the time I went in for a cornea transplant and went through this period where you couldn't move for a couple of days, I started listening to actual play podcasts, and that's how I got into tabletop gaming.
Yeah.
I'm laughing to myself because I had a similar experience, a realization, like, I can't afford to spend money on these video games anymore, that I know I'm only experiencing the surface level of. I was heavily invested in a few Nintendo franchises, and I know I cannot see these anymore. I'm just wasting money, so I have to find some alternatives to invest my time in and money.
We just mentioned video games tend to be quite solo endeavors. I mean, obviously, you've got multiplayer, but it tends to be solo. I want to sort of discuss the sort of the benefits of party-based games, as in a group of people together in a room together, or communicating verbally, at least, and how that collaboration might have found that it helps with disabilities. We have trouble with things. So how that sort of relates to maybe how you view the world, or how you think it might actually help other people view you and each other.
Oh, there's nothing like it. I found that most games are very combative, even in games where we can interact with sighted peers. It's usually aggressive. You're trying to be the best. You're trying to have the most points, trying to get the most kills. In D&D and similar games, you really do work together. You tell a story. You're not in it to win. You're in it to tell a story with your friends. And I've never found anything quite like that before D&D.
Yeah, I consume way too much content about game design and theory and the like. And one thing that always resonates with me is that tabletop role-playing games right now are one of the only forms of media where you are simultaneously the composer, performer, and the audience. So it all feeds back on itself. And when you get a group that is clicking and has the same narrative rhythm, you can play off of each other. You can create amazing scenes. Sometimes the rules in those circumstances just fall away and you all just collectively experience a moment together. And then because it is something that's in person, in the moment, it just is something that you share and then just kind of goes away.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping at some point my sister and her husband will have kids, and I'll be the crazy Uncle Ollie and teach them how to play D&D, because I think that's the learning from an early age of playing with people with different abilities is a very good way of actually going, okay, this person may not be so good at this, but they're excellent at this. So I think that, from my perspective, that's one of a really, really good value to try and instill in people who play. And as you say, you're not the best. You're part of a whole. What's the term? Synergy? So
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's good.
I think that also plays into one of the greatest strengths for role-playing and as an exercise that helps people beyond just having fun. You really work toward creating a team experience and recognizing each other's strengths and benefits. And you mentioned kids, it helps turn dynamics, sharing, and all sorts of things that, you know, help people sort of smooth out those social edges. And it's something that, you know, isn't specific to disability. It's something that can always be useful. And
playing these games builds empathy.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are actually experimenting with using that sort of therapeutic approach to gaming.
So before I started playing D&D and other games, I was exposed to them through popular YouTube shows or podcasts, some of the big name ones. And I realized that I really wanted to play, didn't know how I could access it. And I was worried that, oh, who's going to want to play with a blind person? That's not accessible. So, of course, I did the studying, trying to make things accessible like any of us would in our day-to-day lives. It wasn't easy to find a game. So before long, I decided I need to do this on my own. If no one wants to host me in their table, in their game, I could make my own table. I could bring them to me, and whoever wanted to engage in that could learn from my experience. I could kind of create the environment that I needed. What's the value change between being a player and being a DM? How long did you play before taking the seat of running a game?
Let's see. I played for 6 months, I think, on and off before running my first game. I sort of dabbled in a couple of different systems in that time. And my first game was Fate Accelerated, and the second one was The Strange shortly thereafter. But it really does sort of help to sit in the GM seat, because you can sort of regulate the materials used and the flow of the game.
This was just a few days ago. I've been playing for 10 months. You can mess around as a player, and our group do. We hit as many punchlines as we can. There's a lot of shrieking laughter. It's like a bunch of hyenas playing. So yeah, going to the side, like going onto this. It almost feels like you're on the stage. You're the magician, creating these illusions of control and knowing what's going on. And we just do it off the cuff. I mean, I wrote the adventure. It was a 3-hour one. Wrote 5 encounters, all of which my players completely ruined naturally.
Of course.
But that made it even better, because it was me versus them. I've got to think on my feet. I've got to try and get into. I'm trying to move them in a certain direction, but obviously you can't just go in there. Or a black dragon appears and you can't go that way. it's a negotiation, isn't it? And I thought, yeah, that was a fan. It's, I mean, now when I play, I'm going to be a lot more respectful to my DM, for one thing. I didn't really quite realize how much of a pain I am.
There are a couple different ways to approach it, aren't there? Like, it's respectable to be able to plan gritty details, have everything accounted for, and there's a totally different level of respect owed to people who can improvise everything on the spot.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
There's no shame in playing Smoke and Mirrors. Like, everyone's there knowing that this is a fantasy game or cyberpunk game, whatever you're playing in, and they don't know what you're making up, and they don't know what you have written down on your paper. So
it's like with any fantasy and fiction, it's suspending disbelief.
I think the approach I take is somewhat a little in between the two. You take encounters or core clues, as the gumshoe system calls them, for moving a story forward, and you just kind of make them floating. And so wherever the characters go, they'll run into the plot.
How do you guys do your DMing and GMing? I mean, I was struggling a lot with character sheets, flicking through folders and trying to get voiceover to babble in my ear while my party are babbling in the other ear.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what tools do you guys use to make all of this work, whether you're on the player end or on the GM side?
So in my day-to-day life at work, I'm on the phones all day anyway, so I'm having a collar in the right ear and jaws in the left ear and eavesdropping on my coworkers all at the same time while answering queries on the phone. So I'm used to having the different streams. Your brain just kind of trains. You just build the pathways for that to happen. I haven't had the opportunity to interact with much in the way of character sheets or online virtual tabletops. I've given things like Roll20 a shot, which don't work extremely well with screen readers. But anything I need to have, I usually just put in a notepad and organize it, take control of the organization in that way. And even if it means having 7 notepads open for a session, it's not difficult to tab between them real quick. And
I imagine that things. Looks really good as well. I mean, it looked very well read.
Yeah. I do use Braille dice because I like rolling dice, although for some games, I found that it's speedier just to use a roller.
Right.
My wife, digital roller.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful for one of the parties I play with that not everyone is super willing to, but it's nice when friends are willing to read the dice results out to you or to have Braille dice.
Yeah,
because that's one of the most exciting parts of the game for most people. Like, everybody likes to roll dice. There's just there's something, I don't know if there's a science behind it, but it's gratifying. It's fun to roll dice. Period.
It gives you that little endorphin hit when you throw it up to chance and you get to see what the numbers are.
Mm-hmm. And it's gambling, basically.
Yeah,
in a strange way. Well, not in a strange way. It is gambling.
It is
with your really your character's is. Life.
I spent 3 hours rolling up this character.
exactly.
The games where I think it helps to just use a dice roller are things where that are roll and keep systems like Cortex Plus or the system that makes 7th C run, that you just keep the, you roll a dice pool and then you keep like the 2, 3, or 4 highest depending on what the circumstances are. And that is just easier to do the bookkeeping with a dice roller.
Yeah. I mean, when I play, I don't have a Braille dice. The table we play on is a little bit tight for space. We've got a microphone that we stick in between us so we can all remember what's gone on the previous session. And Braille dice, there's now 5 of us in the party and then also the DM. It's a bit tight on space to be reaching out for Braille dice. I kind of like reading the reactions of my fellow players, because when someone goes, oh no, it's like, you don't know whether it's a nat 1 or a nat 20.
Suspends either
the horror or the exaltation of realizing you've either completely botched something and messed it up or you've nailed it. But yeah, I mean, when I was DMing, I was actually getting the group to roll. I mean, I trust them, and I won't tell them what I'm rolling for, so they can just roll that for me, give me the result, and then I can type it in. For me, yeah, dice rollers added to, as I say, I've had a folder system because I use Mac, so I've got a folder which had the adventure that I've written in it. It had the one text document which had the narrative, because I kept it quite linear. And then I had a folder on the Finder desktop, which had the characters or the encounters in it with all their stat blocks and stuff. So adding a roller into that would have just been incredibly time consuming for me and slowed it down a little bit. So it's going to be something I will develop. And I imagine with anyone who plays, no matter whether they're sighted or not, they find better ways of working systems themselves anyway. There'll be certain things that work faster, certain things that are more accessible and quicker to find for other people and slower for others.
Right. That all comes down to your workflow, what you're used to, even muscle memory, like exactly. Compared to what you've done previously, whether it be an app on your phone for rolling the dice or just a browser window.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure there could be some technical way of creating it all together and tying it all together in a very, accessible either through JAWS or NVDA or VoiceOver.
It's only a matter of time, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, it is a shame that Roll20 isn't isn't more accessible, because that's, it seems like a very, very good resource.
They are actively investigating the issue, I think.
Oh, they are. Fantastic.
Yeah, so I'll go bother them at Gen Con this year.
So I'm wondering, this might be a little bit more of a difficult question for Ollie, since you've only hosted a game just once, but for both of you, when describing things, when weaving a escape for your players, we live, we're fully alive, we have four senses, if not more, still, to share our experiences and immerse our players. But do you find it difficult ever to give good descriptions of people, places, or things that you're interacting with to describe, you found this sword. Oh, what does the sword look like? I'll get back to you on that. Do you ever face issues like that?
Pointy. It looks pointy.
I think for the most part, I describe things in terms of analogy a lot. There's typically, given how the games most people play sort of inhabit a genre convention pretty well, you can just point to things that are similar, and I can just spew lots of techno-thriller babble at people, and they get the image of a kinetic firefight, and that generally does the trick. The more unnerving, usually involving slime or viscera or whatever, words like that tend to get the spirit well enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, get a thesaurus. pointy is good, and then, like, you know, go with, like, you know, keen rapier's edge or whatever, and
right,
just go George R. R. Martin on them.
Yeah. Did that come up for you at all, Ollie? Was that an issue, or did you fly through without it coming up?
I'm a writer anyway, so it's something that I work with quite a lot. I can't remember. God, it would be great if I had the quote to hand. There's a guy who says, "Don't tell me the moon's out. Tell me about the reflection of it in a broken piece of glass." So it's showing the event rather than necessarily saying, a man picks up a sword which is 3.5 feet long, it's about 2 inches wide, it is of a dull grey metal colour, and he moves it at approximately 4 meters per second.
Chrysanthemum.
Sure. Yeah. So it's a don't tell me, show me sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, and, you know, swinging something through the air. It doesn't actually have, I think, a lot of sort of action and verb is kind of more important than actually painting the picture itself. The picture, because you can swing something and you can experience it, the sound of it, the passing of the wind of a sword, if we're using the sword as the example, or you can see it glinting and flashing in the sunlight. Each person's probably going to take the way they see it from just the saying, you've swung the sword.
You can, it's actually kind of liberating in a sense that everyone is going to have their own theater of the mind experience.
Yeah.
And that experience for them, hooks, sensory hooks for them to latch onto, those are going to resonate with them, and they're going to do the rest of the work for you.
Exactly. So it's their own investment in it that helps. This is why, you know, creative games such as these are so good, because it is rewarding, because it is, you do invest in it. You invest your own imagination, creating these worlds, building these worlds as the player. Well, as well as the DM.
But you just have to make sure everyone understands how many doors are in the room.
Yeah, that's it.
Right.
There needs to be the mechanics, the specifics. So the adventure I did on Monday, I made sure that they knew that the walls of the room were white, because that was an important thing. You stick that in with a lot of other stuff that is kind of nonsense, some red herrings or whatever. But it was essential, because once they actually finished the adventure, they turned back as they walked out and realized they were stuck in some... That's a bit of a trope, but they were stuck in a massive skull. So that was important for them to have, for me to say that. But I think generally it's, yeah, I think leave people to work for their own imagination. I think that's kind of key.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's one thing, is just set the mood and then the rest will fill in.
Yeah.
It's wonderful that, much like in, I guess, in a video game, everything's coded in, everything's drawn the way the artist intended it to be, and everyone sees it the same way. But in games like these, the game master gives the descriptions of what's going on, but everyone's going to perceive it in a different way. They're all interacting with the same information you're providing them with, but they all perceive it in their own unique ways, even though they can still interact with it together as a group. I think that's fascinating. I mean,
that's a metaphor for life anyway. So that's how it works with everything. People observe things from a different situation in different ways. Thanks for this conversation. I've learned a lot about role-playing games, which I hadn't already known about because I'm a bit of a novice when it comes to it. I think we can all agree that it's a fantastic pastime for anybody, especially if you're trying to get back into some sort of gaming, some social gaming. It's accessible. It takes a little work, but it's really worth it. And thank you.
I want to thank all of you for speaking to me. I've had a terrific time and learning about your experiences with gaming. I think we all have, just like when we go to the, when we play, we have different perspectives, and it was everyone's take on everything. I think gaming is a lot of fun and has a lot of benefits to offer, and I hope everyone gives it a try.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for including me in this, having a chat. This was a lot of fun. It's really exciting to know that there are other people in the same position that you are. There's millions of blind people. There are a smaller amount of blind people playing role-playing games, but it's great that we have an opportunity to network, get together to find solutions for the troubles that we're facing, and ultimately just have fun like anybody else would. There's so much that we can learn and grow from by playing games. Life is about working, learning, and having fun. Tabletop role-playing games is a prime way to build social skills and have fun all at the same time. Play more games.
Yeah, I'm going to bed.
Yeah.
Thank you all so much. This is wonderful.
Bye. Bye.
So if you've enjoyed listening to us talk about all things role play, why not join the conversation? Get us on Twitter at RNIB Radio.
Or you can email us, radio@rnib.org.uk.
Or you can even get in touch with us via our fully accessible website, rnibconnectradio.org.uk.
If you'd like to connect with me personally, you can find me on Twitter at Tyler_Moonsage.
If you would like to hear more from me or reach out for any game-related conversation, you can find me on Twitter at Acer, Acer_Tolentino. Or check out the actual play podcast I run with my wife at theredactedfiles.com.
Finally, if you want to talk to me personally, Ollie Kennett, you can contact me through Twitter at Oliver Kennett. That's two N's and two T's. Or through my website, oliverkennett.com. Thanks for listening.